everybody, welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast. My name is Stephen Adeboye and I'm here with my special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. My name is Jacob Koenig, or Jacobo if you're daring to pronounce it in Spanish, but you can call me Jacob. I am the CEO of Binary Mango, which is an app development firm operating here and in Miami and a few other places.
All right, awesome. And your accent is very obviously, you know, somewhere else. Can you tell me where you are?
Absolutely. So I'm from Venezuela originally, with family from Colombia and roots from actually Europe. So I'm here back in my roots.
Your heritage. Is this, well, your parents were British or more European?
Well, my parents were Colombian, are Colombian. Yeah. And my grandparents were European. So Austrian, German, Romanian, and actually Egyptian.
Wow. You're one of everything. You're one of the special kind of biracials coming
in. Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you, you said your company, you know, you got Binary and you
Binary Mango, yeah.
How'd you get that name? It's such an interesting name.
So Binary Mango actually came up when we were trying to think what made us passionate about programming, which is the core of what we do. And we were trying to think of something that would combine the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. So something that really challenges you in that way. Yeah. So binary, it's the basic, more rational part of programming, binary, the basic language. And then there's Mango, the juicy, creative aspect of creating something from scratch, which is what programming is all about.
Yeah, and I just saw one of your products and, you know, you tested about augmented reality and stuff. How interesting is that for you guys to get into it at such an early stage?
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. So actually, I got into augmented reality pretty early in my career as a programmer. So I basically taught myself programming, and that's how I started my company.
That's amazing.
And right when I started, what I wanted to do is just challenge not only myself as a professional, but I wanted to challenge what was already established as the regular way of programming. So very soon in my career, I got interested in creating things that were, you know, out there in the line of forefront of innovation.
Yeah.
And I came about, you know, augmented reality. We started doing it actually quite a while ago, way before ARKit and Google Core, you know, implemented it natively into their systems. And yeah.
That's amazing. And so is there a big team of you guys, or is it?
So we're a few team of seniors, and we hire a few people on and off depending on the needs of certain projects.
Okay.
And so I have a nomad agency, so everybody works from a different place. Right now I have senior web developer in Peru. Mm-hmm. I have a senior iOS developer in Chile, and I have a senior Android developer back in Venezuela.
Oh, nice. So it's all over the world, kind of globally, just come together.
And pretty much. And my office was in Edinburgh last month. Right now I'm working from here, from London, and most of the time actually I was based in Miami.
Wow. So complete contrast in weather, complete contrast in cultures and stuff. How did you, I just want to kind of dive in a bit deeper, because you said you learned programming whilst
commuting.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So the story is the following. I used to be, most of my career, I spent it in marketing, and I was working for a great marketing agency called Asylum Marketing. Mm-hmm. That used to be, still is, the agency of record of many great brands. So one of them right now is Juan Valdez, the coffee.
Yeah.
And then I sort of transitioned into a family company back in Venezuela that did coverings. So I was the Marvel representative of a coverings company.
Okay,
so something completely different. And it was a family company. So beyond the challenges of working with family, which are, you know, well known to anybody that has done it, the company itself didn't offer opportunities to me that I regarded as ambitious enough, or really, like, they weren't going to take me to where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And so slowly that sort of started taking me into a very deep, very clinical, I would say, depression. And when I was going through that, if you've been through that, you would know that it's sort of like a big question in your life that has pretty much no answer. So you start sort of throwing arrows all over the place and trying to figure out what to do with your life and how to solve this issue that you're having. And so one particular solution that I came up with was teaching myself programming on the commute to work.
Yeah.
So the commute used to be an hour and a half each way. And what I would do is, this is not an endorsement to anybody listening to the podcast, but I would actually put my cell phone on a thing on the windshield, and I would watch videos on the commute while in traffic. And so I started teaching myself. And then if you know a little bit about depression, basically, you know that it's something along the lines of not being able to do much, just wanting to just relax and not do anything, which actually aggravates the situation. Mm. But what I could do was program.
Wow.
So I would get home and I would have lots of energy to sit down and program. And that was sort of a way that I was sort of healing myself a little bit. And so, you know, at some point I decided, because I had to go back to Venezuela, at the point I was already back in Miami with the same company.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that if anybody asked, I would introduce myself as a programmer.
Yeah.
And so I went on a trip to Israel, and it so happened that I met this guy that asked me what I did, and I told him I'm a programmer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, so I have this friend that wants to do an app, and he has this idea and whatever. And so as soon as I meet this friend, I said, okay, so I'll tell you what. I'm not really a programmer,
mm-hmm.
but what you're asking me to do, I think I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what. I'll try to do it within the next months, and you pay me only at the end if you feel that what I have done accomplishes your goal.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I'm going to charge you way less than anybody else would charge you for anything like this. So I think at the time, because I was in Venezuela, which is a whole subject in and of itself, I set a goal to myself that if I was able to sell the project for $200, which sounds like nothing, but it would have let me live for 2-3 months in Venezuela, I would have quit it and started doing that. And I sold this project for $2,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
And you know, it was an amazing learning experience. The client was actually pretty, you know, since I was so straightforward with him, he was pretty open to let me work and experiment with his idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how it started, basically.
It's a heroic story in my eyes. Like, the way you just told me your struggle and what you went through, and you found a passion that you really fell in love with. And even with the name, you just called your company, you know, Mango.
Yeah.
Your logical and your creative side came together to help you through a situation where you're like, okay, I can pull myself, hopefully, out of depression. Maybe as a sort of consequence of you following your passion, but also you were able to turn that passion and monetize it into what you just, you know, did and made a living out of it.
Is the holy grail.
It's the holy grail. I mean, it's for any entrepreneur. It's kind of like this. That's, you know, the blueprint of what people want to do is just self-improve and hopefully make money out of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hopefully expand from there.
So if I may interject here with something, because so the way that we've been talking about it sounds a lot like I knew what my passion was and I just followed it and then I opened the business that was you know, alongside my passion. But in reality, what happens is that most people don't really know what they want to do, and that's what I believe is the huge issue with the self-help books out there and the sort of conferences that most people go to, is that they assume that you know what your passion is, and then, you know, most conferences, most books are a variation of go get them.
Yeah.
But in fact, actually, I struggled getting to know exactly what I wanted to do. I had absolutely no idea. And that's actually the hard part. Start experimenting with different things that most of them don't work, and then some do, you know, which is the challenge with finding that passion and actually pursuing it.
Yeah. Can I ask, at what age or what stage in your life did you sort of found yourself in that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was 28.
Okay, yeah.
At the time, I was actually 27 at the time where I started.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew that I had some sort of passion for programming. I knew that I liked coding in general, computers in general.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it could develop into something. But at the time where I really, you know, got deep into it and said, okay, let's start doing apps, that was, you know, about that time.
Yeah, because it's just interesting, because I think we're so pressured to sort of find out what our passion is very early on and just go with that for the rest of our lives. You know,
mm-hmm.
from school, you're taught to pick your subjects. Whatever specialism you take is pretty much going to be your bread and butter, and you want to support your family.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of go into this road where you're like, oh, I'm going to do this for like X amount of years. And then you go, maybe 2 years into it, this isn't me. Like, I'm going to be doing this for that long, otherwise it's going to drive me insane. And I think finding out that you can reevaluate at any point of your life, it's okay. No one's going to judge. I mean, people can judge you, but no one's going to be harder than yourself, I believe, when it comes to you making a pivotal decision about how you want to live your life. And I think it's very important to have that narrated because it's not documented. I think we grew up with our parents pretty much staying in the same job or the same sort of specialism for quite some time. And you kind of had to say, okay, they stuck it out, so I should do the same. But with the way the world is moving, I think we've got flexibility to sort of pivot where we need to. There's no sort of, you know, there is a safety net. I think we do have that, but we don't put that in our minds that, you know, it will be okay. So, you know, for those who are listening, it's good to sort of have that self-awareness to know that you can do something, you know, with your current situation, follow your passions, taste as much as you can.
And beyond what your college said you graduated from, and that's my case. I graduated from business school, actually.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't think I got that much out of it. And I'm not endorsing not going to college. I think it was a great experience. And I think I did learn a lot of general abilities. But everybody knows that we're in the midst of a transition towards a bit of a different educational scheme. And I think it's going to go towards trade schools, sort of like where you learn specific skills.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be more trade focused.
Yeah. Because if I know how to build a chair, you can sell it for $5 or you can sell it for $5,000.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's something. You're creating something. And that's what happened with programming for me, that I was able for the first time in my life to create something with my ideas.
You know, that's interesting as well. Not to sort of scare people, but with AI coming into play and... You know, people probably not looking at it, or looking at it too much. How do you see the next 5-10 years? Do you think, you know, AI is going to come into play to sort of, you know, do more with the automation, but also probably make some jobs redundant in that sense?
So with the disclaimer that I believe nobody knows, having said that, I think that my opinion would be that AI is going to take away some of the crappier jobs.
Yeah.
And people are going to transition to better jobs, I think. Most people are pessimistic about the history of humanity, and everybody feels that things are getting worse and worse. And in fact, data shows exactly the opposite. The world is getting much better, and technology has a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
So I think that even though you're probably not going to have your McDonald's cashier job, you're probably going to be able to do something a bit more engaging. So, and that's the nature of history. That's just, you know, there's no watchmakers or shoe repairers, well, you know, in the traditional sense of the word. And that's fine. It's just that it transitioned to a different type of job. And people actually are very good at adapting. So the result of that is actually less poverty, more education, you know, in fact, across the board, pretty much much better way of life, you know, quality of life. Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it kind of does free, hopefully, you to do something much more meaningful in your job. And even if it's nothing too exciting from what you were before, at least it's a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
With your clients, they've also kind of benefited from, you know, the technology that you're providing. Can you talk about some of the projects that you've done so far?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. We've done quite a few that are really exciting. So talking about augmented reality that I showed you a bit before, so we sort of created a way to try on watches through augmented reality.
Yeah.
I hadn't showed you that one specifically, but that was an interesting project because the way that we got to the client was a bit of a Trojan horse that we did.
Okay.
So I started experimenting with augmented reality and I created a demo to do it. And I knew a guy that was in Miami and that was going to Philadelphia where the office moved. You know, to start working from there. So I gave him this app to show his people there.
Yeah.
And sure enough, a few months after, they called me. They were like, we want to fly you to Philadelphia and we want you to implement this in our Watchbox app. And you know, that was a fun project. So now they have it in their application or augmented reality framework. And we've done, you know, social media apps. We did one for a world-renowned calisthenics athlete that actually picked up really fast. And quite a few others.
It's crazy. Like, I think because you're such in the early stage of it, and it's such an exciting space right now. Everyone wants to be like, okay, I'm going to have a taste of it. And once they have it, it's like, I want that. That's going to help me with my marketing. That's going to help me make me look cool. And I think it's really cool to sort of see that. Now, I'm just trying to see in terms of how you can pivot towards more of a general audience.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned about books and how characters can come to life. is that something that you're probably going to dive into?
Yeah, I'm actually actively looking for people that are in that sort of area segment where if specifically if somebody creates children's books, mm-hmm. Or you know, somebody with creativity to create a children's book, I want to bring augmented reality into those things. Yeah. Another thing that I've been starting to do is trying to put augmented reality into art. Mm. So something about along the lines of recognizing art in the wall and showing sort of the inner meaning of art through augmented reality. So, you know, obviously the concept aspect of it, the conceptual part is something that I would want to partner with somebody for.
Yeah.
But I would want to bring technology into those areas because I think it would be a very cool experiment.
Yeah, because I think the possibilities are endless.
Absolutely.
It could be pretty much even my past right now to get into work. Just has a little bio of me, just like, oh yeah, this is my name and etc.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, okay, you have face recognition. You have quite a few advances there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what do you see in the next 5 years for your company? Do you have any big plans, or is it all hush hush?
No. Actually, we're very open about it. We're working with actually quite amazing entrepreneurs and startups, and so the pivot we started doing this year is focusing a little bit less on brands, mm-hmm. And doing this sort of projects, augmented reality, chatbots, and this type of thing with brands, and a little bit more with startups,
yeah.
And doing apps for people with ideas. Because what I want to find is a balance between our, you know, great ability to execute good apps, mm-hmm. and people's own abilities within their own spaces. So I'm partnering up right now with an architect for something having to do with aerial photography. Mm-hmm. I'm partnering up with a photographer and a world traveler
wow.
for social media that has to do with those things. And those are the type of things that I want to do much more.
Well, so it's just, you know, again, with people and getting them involved in this. I just see, you know, with social media being a big part of how we live our lives. How do you think it's going to play out with augmented reality, or if not, just in general, how do you think social media is going
to play out? So I think that the technology powering augmented reality, which is computer vision,
yeah.
the fact that you're going to be your devices are going to be much more aware of your surrounding, the mm-hmm. same way that I can recognize an image and overlap some content on top of that,
yeah.
that is pretty amazing. I think that technology. It's funny because I once did an interview with Google and they asked me that question, where do you think is the technology is going? And it was a variance of this same answer. So at the time I said something about devices being aware of your location, which mm. was sort of new at the time. Mm. Right now, I think it's the same answer with a different knowledge of your surroundings. So instead of your location, your devices will know a bit more about, you know, what you have around and what you are seeing in terms of, you know, your space that surrounds you. And that's going to give you, the user, a much richer experience.
Mm. Do you think in terms of the trade-off, I know a lot of discussions happened, obviously, with privacy, data,
yeah.
and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trade-off of that. Where do you stand? Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Just, yeah. So I might be wrong. I might be completely misled. My personal opinion, I'm on the who cares
yeah.
side.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll change my opinion, but for now, it's... you know, most of the time, when you hear that Google has your data, it doesn't mean that Google goes into the database and search for Jacob, and it just means that they use your information to cater a better experience.
Yeah.
And in the case of Google, it has to do with ads.
Mm.
Now, if you think that them providing more accurate ads to you, it's a bad thing, then yeah, sure. Then having your data then is a bad thing. Mm. I don't think that's a bad thing because I'm aware that Google is trying to advertise to me. So I don't care that they use my data to do that better.
Yeah.
You understand? And they're not really using any data that I'm not giving them. Mm. So, again, my position is I don't care that much about yeah. the fact that, you know, that data is available.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same camp as well. I think it's, well, you got to look at it from this way. If you have nothing to really hide, then why?
No. That I disagree. I disagree.
All right, go on.
And so I think I followed Edward Snowden
okay,
for a little
fine.
Bit,
right,
and he had a quote about that. So saying you don't care about people knowing your data because you have nothing to hide is the same thing as not caring about freedom of speech because you have nothing to say. Mm-hmm. I think that was more or less his quote. No, I don't think it's the fact that you have nothing to hide, because even if you don't, but you want to hide it, it's your prerogative. Mm-hmm. So it's not about you not having anything to hide. Mm-hmm. Because you are free to choose what information is available to people. But you have to understand, like, Facebook is free. Mm-hmm. And the cost that you're paying to use Facebook is them having your information to cater advertisement to you, because that's their business.
Right.
And I don't really find any fault with that. Mm. But again, that's my opinion.
Yeah. I understand. It's a business. At the end of the day, they have to generate revenue. And if it's data that's doing it, that's fine.
Right.
The transparency of where that data is going to, I think that's where the big question mark is. Mm-hmm. If it's going to just these companies, that's fine. But if it's going to somewhere else, that's going to hopefully not manipulate the data or something like that, then it's going to be a bit of a question mark on that one.
Fair enough. Yeah. So I know there's the controversy with that company.
Yeah, Cambridge
Analytica. Yeah. As I understand it, they had a little bit more access to a little bit more information that they were sort of entitled to with your approval. They had access to your friend's friends. Again, since that information is not used individually, so they're not really, you know, using, you know, again, that let's say this. I think that particular case, I think it's a bit more complicated.
Yeah, of course.
Again, I would be probably more inclined towards the position that your information, you gave it freely, and, you know, it's as long as you're a consensual consenting adult, then that's fine.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting debate. It's not interesting, it's a healthy conversation that hopefully we'll bring into life.
Yeah,
because, you know, a lot of what's happening is changing, and the way we're using technology is changing, and I think there was this backlash before, and I think we need to push for innovation. If you don't push for innovation, we're never going to, you know, move past where we are, and I think we need to start having these comfortable, healthy discussions to say, okay, what's available, what's going on, and how can we better suit our situations to make things better for our experience? Because, you know, I love using my phone to pay. I don't want to be like using my cash to pay. I'm pretty much don't carry a wallet sometimes.
Right.
And I'm that kind of guy, and I did my dissertation on that. So, and this was back in 2012. And I was saying, look, mobile payments is going to be the future. And, you know, 4 or 5 years and now 6 years, it was really happening, and it's more often than not.
Right.
So I like that side of things, and I want people to really, you know, embrace these things. I want them to embrace the technology you bring in and have, you know, the good experience that they should be having. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the physical card is I think gonna disappear. So you're touching on a very dear project that I want to push out at some point. But I think that's a much longer discussion.
It's a much longer discussion. I've got a whole, like I said, I did a dissertation on it, and I know even from the developing world, they were far ahead than what was happening in the UK. So to see that we're at that stage and other countries are so far ahead with how they use payments,
it's amazing because there's a few projects trying to quote-unquote bank the unbanked in Africa particularly right now. And obviously they can't use credit cards because they can't create a whole physical ecosystem for them to pay and get paid. And I think face recognition might be used for that.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a few other things. So actually, you know, there's a few amazing possibilities to start banking without the physical cards and even without your smartphone, if you think about it. But we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, that has to be reserved for another podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
<I'm> sure. But is there anything that you want to plug just before we end the conversation?
So in terms of entrepreneurship, I would say follow your passion. Absolutely, you have to do that. Don't make it, don't put it upon yourself unless you really can handle it. To the pressure of succeeding with your passion, if you have a day job, if that makes any sense. So keep your day job and try to work at night. So I'm a big fan of night entrepreneurs. They are killing it. They are rocking it. There's plenty of time for you to follow your passion at night if you're a work, you know, you have good work ethics and you like to work a lot. So just get home at 6, and from 6 to 9, you start working on your passion and create something. And once you sell the first, you know, once you've proved your concept, then quit everything and go and go for it. And the next day, you'll feel the weight of the world in your shoulders, and that's fine. Mm. And then just go out and sell another project and go.
Yeah, I love that advice. I love that advice. And where can they find you in terms of social media?
So my name is a little bit hard to spell, but
I'll put it in the link.
Yeah, put it in the link. But my first and last name are usually my handle for everything. So my AR projects and most of my cool stuff, I put it on Twitter.
Yeah,
Jacobo Koenig, JACOBOKOENIG. It's my handle. So on Twitter, and then binarymango.com is my company's page.
All right, nice stuff. Look, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely.
And I hope you guys enjoy the podcast and listen to us. Thank you very much and take care. Hey, podcast listeners, thanks for listening, and thanks for my special guest, and thanks for clicking the play button. But I need you to do 4 things for me. I want you to like, comment, subscribe, and share this content. It will help tremendously with the growth of this podcast, and I'm producing more content than ever. So I want you guys to be the first to know, and I want others to know as well. So do those 4 things for me and help this podcast grow to a bigger platform. Thanks for listening.